If you have a financial question for Peg or Bruce, you can always call this number 24-7, 888-6-ADVICE. You can also email those questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But we urge you to call or text our studio line right now during the show, 651-461-9226. Once again, Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor Peg Webb, along with founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, Financial Advisor Bruce Helmer. Good morning.
Good morning, Denny. Good morning, Bruce.
Hello, Denny Long. Hello, Peg Webb. Hello, listeners. Thank you for being with us today. Denny and listeners, today we're going to talk about kind of what's been going on in the market, review what's happened year to date, and try to give some insights and some forecast into what might happen going forward. We're going to look at some of the key economic and market trends that we see that are likely to influence the second half of the year. And we're fortunate to have with us today, and you've heard him on the show before, we're pleased to welcome back Matthew Parks. Matthew's a portfolio consultant in Wealth Enhancement's Winter Springs, Florida office. He's a CFA, those of you that know anything about our business, a certified financial analyst is a tough designation to get. It means you're really, really smart. He's also a chartered market technician. He brings his insights into shaping how we run our portfolios for investors. And Matthew, before we get too far into this, I have a natural tendency to want to shorten Matthew and call you Matt, but I don't want to be informal. If you don't like Matt, if you prefer Matthew, do you have a preference?
Thank you. My preference is Matthew, but I'm definitely the youngest of a very large family, so I won't be offended either way.
Well, I learned my wife is Pamela, and people always want to call her Pam, and she doesn't like that. So I'm very sensitive to not being overly informal without someone's permission. So, Matthew, thank you for joining us today. And I guess I want to start by saying I know we've got insights, we've got ideas. You're gonna lead that discussion. But I think it's important that we always tell people a couple of things. Number one, nobody knows for sure what's going to happen in the markets in the short term, and anyone that claims they can is either misguided or dishonest. And the second part of that, kind of 1A and 1B, is that investments in stocks are long-term investments, and to some degree, the short term doesn't matter. If you need your money in the short term, it shouldn't be in stocks anyway, but if you don't need it for a while, history historically has shown us that long-term stocks give investors good returns, but there can be some bumps in the road along the way. So get the ball rolling. Kind of, markets are at or near all-time highs as we are past the midway point of the year. What's happened and where do you think we're going? And I know that's a broad question. The whole discussion today is going to be a subset of that. Matthew?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Bruce. Yeah, so year-to-date, we saw quite a difference between the international and U.S. stocks. At the low of the year in April, the gap was quite wide. But ever since then, U.S. stocks have continued to rally, and now the gap has narrowed quite a bit, where U.S. stocks are up about 9 to 10% this year so far, where global stocks are still up about 20%. But, I mean, as you point out, and putting that in context, we're still at we are at all-time highs historically. Valuations are still, pretty much near all-time highs, even following the little sell-off. So overall, the markets continue to perform as it's done and, perform pretty consistently.
How is that possibly happening, right? We continue to watch these markets. What's going on that's driving this? Because it wasn't too long ago that we had a setback and everybody was, whoa, this is, oh dear, here we go. And it's the opposite halfway through the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of that worry was sparked by the talks of tariffs. And on average, the average tariffs have gone up across all products in categories. A lot of the fear was sparked by this is going to be hugely inflationary. And while prices going up, by definition is inflationary, instituting tariffs is a one-time event. So there wasn't as much carry forward pressure on prices as, you know, the news may have said there would be, or, you know, as well as we're seeing productivity gains with companies starting to incorporate AI into some basic processes. Those are kind of the main driving factors that we've seen so far this year.
So other things that have been happening is, I have to tell you, I was one that was buying in that Prime Day, you know, on Amazon, and they gave us 4 days and they give all discounts and that kind of thing. Just amazing to me the number of people just spending. So that confidence has to be out there, right?
So far as what we're seeing, it still is. I know some of the economic indicators are a little bit hit or miss on gauging consumer confidence, but nothing nearly as bad as what was anticipated looking at a market sell-off. You know, we're still seeing strong spending, strong earnings across the board. Okay.
Yeah, and you know, when we talk about people spending, the labor market also seems to be resilient.
Yes, and let me actually grab the latest stats here. Yeah. The unemployment rate is holding at record lows. We've been at between 4.0 and 4.2% unemployment rate for a little over a year now. So the job and labor market is quite resilient. We're not seeing anything indicating weakness in the labor market itself, which is definitely a boost to confidence and consumer confidence driving, you know, the market reaching all-time highs.
I think the big curiosity, Matthew, is the Fed rate cuts. You know, so is there some dramatic thing that's going to happen? Because it seems like there's complexity because the Fed keeps talking about, you know, not lowering interest rates, and some are really against that. What would be an ideal situation to keep this momentum going in the next 6 months with the stocks?
Yeah, part of the momentum is forward looking. In other words, the stock market is pricing in news that's pretty much generally expected. And one of those things that, you know, on the optimistic side, is the Fed cutting rates. Now, so far this year, they've been a little, let's say, sluggish to do so. And I wouldn't even say sluggish, they're just careful. They're approaching this very careful, coming out of what could have been a much bigger runaway inflation period in 2020, 2021. And so they're approaching this very carefully, but generally the market is expecting the next couple steps from the Fed to be rate cuts. And when the Fed cuts rates, that is a boost to the prices of stocks, because all companies are valued using discounted cash flows that are based on interest rates. So lower interest rates mean the value of companies can be priced higher.
Hey, Matthew, I want to kind of combine a couple things that you've talked about already and try to get clarity, not only for listeners, but even for myself. So, I mean, it's no secret to anybody. The president has been very vocal about wanting the Fed to lower interest rates. And they, as you mentioned, they've been reluctant to do that. And yet I'm still not clear on what all the tariffs, how they're going to work, when they're going to work, and what the impact is going to be, and if they're going to cause rising prices. So if you're the Fed chairman and you anticipate prices going up because of the tariffs, why would you cut rates right now? Why would we have that expectation? I'm not convinced that, you know, we aren't going to get inflation again. And if we do, the chairman wouldn't want to cut rates. So help us understand what the result is going to be of these tariffs and potential trade agreements, what that might do to the Fed interest rate, and what that ultimately does to the stock market and people's 401ks.
Absolutely. Yeah. The tariffs are a point of uncertainty, and that's very exactly the issue. The stock market investors don't like uncertainty. They don't like not being able to forecast earnings, revenue. The Fed doesn't like being able to, or doesn't like having uncertainty when trying to determine what growth and inflation is going to look like. So that definitely plays a big part into the Fed's decision and apprehension to make any just call without seeing how this unfolds. Now, looking at the tariffs, what we're seeing, though, is as other countries come to the table and make adjustments to their tariffs and policies on their side to create a more balanced trade, we're actually seeing very limited implication or implementation of these tariffs for any extended period of time. Most of them get to the letter stage and presentation may be instituted shortly, but as the other countries are coming and negotiating and making the trade a little more fair both ways, the tariffs aren't being fully carried out. It's a bit of a negotiation play, very similar to what we saw in 2017, where it seemed like every news headline said, Trump is starting a trade war. There will be tariffs. There's going to be inflation. But yet when we look at history, how many of those were actually signed? You know, how many of those were ratified and put in place? So right now, what we're seeing is it's just a little bit of uncertainty there.
So when it comes then to the Federal Reserve, any kind of predictions of what you think they're going to do? I mean, there seems to be some kind of tension within the Fed and a lot of confusion around should the cut rates. They don't necessarily want to. They kind of want to wait and see. How does that help all of our clients? Is it good news? Is it bad news? Is it just part of this uncertainty?
Yeah. Well, one of the things, so we have at least 50, last time I counted, group of team members on our investment management team. And part of this is just reviewing the data, reviewing what's happening. And one of the documents that the Fed puts out that's very meaningful is called their Summary of Economic Projections. And that's where they specifically put all the team members of the Fed expect rates to be at different points in time. And so it's not taking that and using that as a crystal ball, but it's using that as part of the investment strategy to adapt as markets change. And that is really the benefit of having a system and a process when investing.
Okay. So you just said there's 50 investment people at Wealth Enhancement Group. That's amazing because I kind of forgot how many people and how big that team is. But there's just so much research that needs to be done and, portfolios that have to be monitored. And they're doing a great job. So I'm glad that you brought that up and you're part of that team. How about if we just talk about then, so here we are. We're all happy right now. I mean, I'm happy. Bruce, I'm sure you're happy. The clients are happy. Everybody's portfolios are coming, are going up. But what I know, and it's just a prediction, but is this going to continue? Is AI that big of something that's coming just like as if the computers came out one day? Is there going to be that dramatic of a change?
That's something not only do I not know, but I don't think anybody knows at this point. There is a lot of excitement early on in what AI has been able to do to boost productivity. But as far as long-term or longer-term structural changes, no one knows. and it's about managing the investment strategy based on the best available data at any point in time. And it's a lot of that means just sorting through the noise and the excitement. You know, the market is driven by humans, and part of that is influenced by the emotion of people. And so it's very, having a process in a team to sort through and try to make the best of investment decisions based on the relevant data available now is the approach, the only approach I can see that makes sense and works in the long run.
If you joined us late and you don't recognize the extra voice on with Peg and Denny and myself, Matthew Parks, a portfolio consultant in Winter Springs, Florida, was kind enough to join us today. We're talking about where the market's been, where we think it's going. Matthew, we've talked about some things that we're optimistic about. You know, we talked about that the markets are at or near all-time highs. We talked about consumer resilience, consumer confidence, consumer spending. We talked about low unemployment. We talked about that inflation, for the most part, at least right now, seems under control, seems in check. A lot of positives. And we touched a little bit on some negatives, but what are some of the key concerns that you and your team look at in terms of going forward that give you concern?
Yeah. So with a lot of those positive topics, there's another side to the coin. Markets being at all-time highs means that we should probably have a plan or a conversation in place for what happens if the markets sell off. And part of that is, you know, that's always a risk when the markets are near or trading near the top of their channel or their average ranges. The other aspect is we're seeing, and this is not new to this year or last year, but as a broader theme, an increase in political uncertainty. And it's really sparked by some of the events in the Middle East and with Russia and Ukraine. So unlike other times of, you know, peaceful times where Europe didn't have as much of a political risk on the horizon, you know, that has become into the conversation, as well as what does AI mean? AI could be the largest boost to productivity we've seen, but it could also be, you know, quite a detriment or threat to some levels of jobs. So what does that look like for unemployment? What sort of opportunities are there? How are companies going to navigate and handle this? So there are some threats associated or risks associated with each of those good, you know, the good aspects of what we're seeing.
I still think that there's a lot of room there for optimism. You know, I feel like there is uncertainty, but I love what Bruce said at the very beginning of this show. It's the stock market. It's just, there's an anticipatory mechanism out there that we're supposed to kind of see the future, but we can't. And I think this AI is just so dramatically a change as I'm, you know, learning about it and, you know, robots coming out and all these things, that there's kind of this different world that we're going to see. And I don't know how much of it I'll see in my future, but I think there's a big change. But I think that warrants, calmness and long-term thoughts, meaning I don't think that even though we think there's going to be volatility here and uncertainty, you know, make sure your percentage of equities are the percentage that you want longer term. Would you agree, Matthew?
Absolutely. And AI and technology is the exciting topic. Yet it, in the full construction of a balanced portfolio that's going to last throughout entire retirement, it's a somewhat small part of it. And, you know, part of it means building out cash flows, looking at defensive sectors that perform well in market downturns. And there's a whole host of, you know, alternatives, private equity, other things. There's so many asset classes out there that really go into building a balanced portfolio that steal the headline, you know, the AI steals the headline away from.
Hey, Matthew, we're down to a little less than 2 minutes before we need to take a break. So I don't want to hit you with another question that may take a longer answer than we have. Denny and listeners and Peg and Matthew, I'm going to suggest that we kind of wrap up our discussion. The second half of the show, I know there's a couple more things, Matthew, that you probably want to hit on, but we will also get listeners involved. But I also, Matthew, I'll give you a little tease here. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, because I actually got this question from a client. So when we talk about stocks, we know that not all stocks are created equally. I had a client recently reach out and say, you know, overall I'm happy with my returns, but when I analyze my portfolio, I see that small caps have been a drag as compared to large caps. Maybe we should get rid of all these small caps and put more money in the large caps. So ponder that question and be prepared to answer after the break. I know how I answered, but I'd be curious to see how you answer it. And then we'll wrap up the discussion, Denny, and hopefully we'll get plenty of time for listeners to chime in with their questions also.
Very good, Bruce. And in the meantime, if you do happen to think of something midweek, we always like to hear from you at 888-6-ADVICE. Again, 888-6-ADVICE. You can always email those questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But during the show right now, we urge you to call. You can either call or text our studio line, 651-461-9226. Again, 651-461-9226. We'll be back after this break with more of Your Money. Stay with us. If you have a financial question for Peg or Bruce, you can call this number 24/7. Keep in mind, 888-6-ADVICE. You can also email those questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But we urge you to call or text our studio line during the show right now at 651-461-9226. Once again, here's Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor Peg Webb, and the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, Financial Advisor Bruce Helmer.
Thank you, Danny Long. Thank you, listeners. If you joined us late, we've been discussing what's been going on in the market and the second half forecast are our best educated guests. Joining Peg and I today, we're pleased to have Matthew Parks. Matthew's a portfolio consultant in Wealth Enhancement's Winter Springs, Florida office. He's one of the 50-some-odd people that make the decisions that run our portfolios on behalf of our clients, try to get the best risk-adjusted returns that we can. Matthew and Peg, I don't want to replicate everything we did already in the first half of the show, but I also want to make sure we give listeners time to get involved. I kind of set the stage. I asked Matthew a question. I asked him to answer when we come back from break. But before you do that, Matthew and Peg, maybe key thoughts or key takeaways, something you want to make sure that we talk about that might be of value to listeners, something key for them to take away from the show today that might be useful. Peg?
Yeah, I think, you know, looking at maybe a little bit longer term, and then is there something that we should do today, Matthew, that would change the way we're thinking? Meaning, you know, are you diversified enough? Are you in the right asset classes? That kind of thing. Matthew?
Yeah, thank you, Peg. So part of one of the things that's important to keep in mind is don't let the headlines completely dictate the way you think about investing. Because if you did, you'd be focused on the employment rate and AI completely. But yet, building out the really diversified portfolio that is has a plan for, is designed for multiple market conditions, whether the market's going up, down, or sideways, is incredibly important. It's probably one of the most important aspects of investing, as well as being able to have whether you're doing it yourself or working with professionals like Wealth Enhancement, is have a process and a system. Being consistent with an approach or a process is just as important, so that when markets change, you're not, you know, scrambling to address changes differently every single time they come up. Having consistency may, you know, underperform in one period, in, you know, in particular, but in the long run is one of the keys to success in having consistent returns that means your investments help you accomplish your goals in retirement or whatever period you're looking at. Okay.
Yes, I would agree. And I want to make this comment. I always use it, slow and steady wins the race, right? But we have clients that are just, they get a little heightened when, you know, there's, it appears like there's these big opportunities and maybe we're not investing a higher percentage into those things, which are actually quite risky, right, at this point. But decades of time, Bruce and I and everybody at Wealth Enhancement Group have just watched this, that slow and steady wins the race. You know, being methodical, not making dramatic changes, not going in and out of the markets, that's where the success really comes over the long term. Bruce?
I just want, you know, so Matthew, I'd asked the question, and I think we've kind of already been dancing around it a little bit, but so what would you say to someone that says, small cap is underperforming. Why do you guys have small cap in my portfolio? Why don't you move it to large cap?
Yeah, I think even getting to the point of that question is you got to take a step back and say, what is the top line return then? How has your portfolio performed? Because if you're going to look at every little aspect or underlying holding of the portfolio, you would end up with nothing left. Because every position, every sector, every factor investment will underperform at any point in time, whether it's for a 1 month, 3 month, 12 month period. And so part of that is let's step back and look at how's the top line. Are you getting the returns that you're looking for that we've built into your financial plan? How is the, when we combine everything, how's the risk? Are you up at night thinking about it? And by incorporating small cap, even though it may seem counterintuitive, it lowers the risk so that your portfolio is not bouncing around as much like a pinball, but it's more consistently, or as Peg would say, very, you know, slow and steady. And that's what we're going for. But you look at different time periods, small cap has done well. It was the top performing asset or investment coming out of 2020. You know, into 2021, you know, rebounding out of 22. You got to be very careful to look at the entire scope or context and history of different factors of an investment strategy. And you certainly don't want to abandon, you know, say small cap in this example, when it's underperforming for a period of time, because likelihood is in whatever next period of time we're looking at, small cap would probably be closer to the top. You know, you may have sell your best performing asset in the future period. There, Bruce.
Yeah, and to that point, Matthew, you know, I think sometimes clients, not our clients so much, we've coached them up pretty well over the years, but investors in general, I've talked about this on the show before, Peg, maybe the goal, the bogey, based on our financial planning, the rate of return that we're shooting for a client is 6. And we have a year where we make 8, and they come in on the annual review, and we're thinking they're going to be happy. We made 8, and the bogey was 6, and they come in, and they're unhappy because the S&P made 10, and why didn't they make 10? And I have to remind them, not all of your money is in domestic large-cap stock, nor should it be, and our bogey was 6, and we made 8. Now, if you want to change the goal and have us try to beat the S&P 500, we can do that, but I don't think we should. We're trying to get you the rate of return that will hit your goals and objectives with the least amount of risk possible to get there. Peg and Matthew, again, I want to give you both a chance for a last key point. Otherwise, we'll let listeners take us home. Peg?
I'm ready for listeners, and I'm so thrilled to have Matthew here for the questions that are yet to come.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear how we can help and what the questions out there are.
Here is our studio line. You can call in or text in right now, in fact, 651-461-9226. Again, 651-461-9226. Here's a text that I know that Bruce and Peg get often. Thoughts on paying off home mortgages, currently at 3% loan.
Matthew, do you have an opinion on liquidating debt?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the first things is the interest rate, and it looks like we got that provided. The next thing is, what sort of other liquidity do you have? Are you going to be, you know, draining all of the cash and liquid assets you have to pay it off? Because that's a different question than just interest rates. outside of that, I mean, referencing, you know, other client experiences, going into retirement with no mortgage is an enormous peace of mind. Now, when we're talking about a 3% interest rate, the investment nerd in me says, no, markets are, here's the market returns, or here's what I can get with U.S. Treasury bonds. And so really, that may be a conversation of peace of mind more than it may be from an investment, you know, expertise point of view. From investment point expert perspective, when interest rates on, say, treasury bonds or really high-quality corporate bonds are above the rate on your mortgage, I would be inclined to purchase and lean into that until the rates on those drop below what you're paying on your mortgage. So you're going to want to stay in the highest interest rate part of the market there, Bruce.
I wanted to go down a different, that was a really good answer, Peg. Anything you wanted to add to that?
Well, I wanted to say, Bruce, you know me well enough after decades of time that I love debt-free. And I focus on that. I help clients get to be debt-free because it just changes their entire psyche. And that's kind of how I am too. The other thing about mortgages, you got to remember, you go buy a brand new house today and pretend that mortgages are still 3.5%, 99% of your payment is that interest, you know, on that money early on. So that's, it's hard to kind of gain equity in your house in the beginning for sure. So we look at a lot of factors as to whether people should take a mortgage, whether they should pay off their mortgage. You know, if it's at the tail end is what I see more so with clients, is it's really all principal that you're paying off anyway. So it actually depends, Bruce.
Yeah, and again, listeners have heard, Matthew, have heard Peg and I talk about this for years. And I agree with everything Peg just said, but I also take it back to part of what you said. What is the cost of the debt service? I mean, the answer I give on paying off debt, I like to talk about good debt versus bad debt. Is it debt that's going to enhance your life somehow? Is it education? Is there some return on investment? Or is it just you're going to go buy something that you want? You're going to take a vacation and there's nothing left to show for it after you take the loan or run up a balance on your credit card that you can't pay off and now the vacation is over. So is it good debt or bad debt? Part of that analysis is what is the cost of the debt service? What's the interest rate? So if somebody has a double-digit interest rate on a credit card, I'm going to tell them absolutely you should be paying down or paying off that debt. But if it's a 3% mortgage, if it's a low cost on an appreciating asset, I don't feel as strongly about it. But I don't disagree with anything Peg said about the fact that our most successful clients do tend to get to the point where they're debt-free. Denny, can we give the information again and about getting listeners involved?
Absolutely. There is time for your financial questions, so take advantage of it. 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. A texter says this: what percentage of percent of a portfolio would you suggest for a senior? Texter says, I know it's an average percent in the S&P.
So, Matthew, again, not an exact science and probably a lot more that you would need to know about the texter, but talk just a little bit about how much exposure to different asset classes in very general terms that you and your team look at in terms of the investment management department.
Yeah. So there's a couple ways we approach this, and a lot of this has been shaped in part with the way some of our senior financial advisors look at this also, because, you know, it's trying to marry the investment, technical investments side of it with the financial advice side of it. Some people, you know, look at this and say, I start with a baseline of a 60-40 portfolio with 60% in U.S. equities. And part of that is, you know, pick a benchmark, stick to it. And then 40% in fixed income. But then we will iterate or make changes from there depending on what is your risk tolerance. How much, what is your cash flow needs? What is your, you know, your unique picture look like? And that's where the, you know, the knowledge and relationship with the advisor able to shape that. Another way, you know, approach that we've taken is, what are your cash flow needs from the portfolio for the next 3 to 5 years? There is your target number for, say, a fixed income exposure to make sure that those monies are safe and somewhat protected. And then what do we do with what's left? And then we start the conversation with, what's your appetite for risk? And then we'll iterate from there. But, you know, what we're seeing on average is something along the lines of a 60-40 to, say, a 70-30 portfolio mix, which is good enough, typically what we're seeing, to still generate returns and growth, but yet keep a substantial portion of your assets in your nest egg in fixed income and protected for future cash flows. So it's there when you need it.
And I always talk to clients, you know, as they get older, as they get close to retirement or they get into the retirement years, their goals and objectives should change, and they logically typically do. So, you know, when you're in your 40s or even early 50s, you're probably focused on growth. That's the top priority. But as you get older and closer to retirement, maybe preservation becomes more important to you. Maybe income off of your portfolio. Yes, we still want growth, but maybe that becomes, you know, a distant third in your priority list instead of number one. We want preservation or safety. We want income, and yes, we still want growth. I want to bring something up before we run out of time, Peg. I'm sorry if I'm ambushing or hijacking the show, but cyber crypto Bitcoin has not come up yet today, and frankly, I thought maybe I didn't say anything in the first half of the show because I thought we'd get a question on it from listeners. But Matthew, talk a little bit, if you could, about cyber currency or cryptocurrency or Bitcoin. And, you know, we talked a little bit about AI, but what about all this? I get the question a lot from clients. What about the cyber currency that's now so pervasive in the world, Matthew?
Yeah, and we deal with, from the investment side of this, of how do you value cyber assets, digital assets, whether it's cryptocurrencies, NFTs, or so on. Because that actually reminds me of a story. I had a friend reach out from acting college, and he, you know, said, hey, I got this cryptocurrency. Put $1,000 in, it's now worth $150. And my first thought is, great, get out of that. Get out of that. Congrats. I'm so excited. Because what we're seeing is, this is like the Wild West, where assets are, you know, coming, exploding in value, and then declining. So what we're trying to do is figure out what, you know, sort through the noise. And now we have a history with some of the largest asset classes, you know, within the space, say Bitcoin, Ethereum. Some of them, and technically the stocks and companies that support the infrastructure behind them, to say, hey, maybe there is, we don't yet have the full picture of what this is going to be, but we understand maybe where the more stable parts of the industry are in this, and are starting to have, you know, sort of guidelines or ideas of how do you allocate to it. You know, personally, I'm still in the camp of, if you want to, maybe have exposure to the asset class as a whole. You know, own the 5 to 10 largest market cap cryptocurrencies. If that's, you know, try to find a way or an approach that isn't following the fad or a trend, but still gives you exposure to the asset class as a whole there, Bruce.
That's a great answer. Denny?
I think we have time for one more. Here is a text that says this: retired in December 2024, rolled out of my 401k in January. Target equity reinvest is about 65%. Current position is about 45% of the portfolio, so have about another 20% to go. Was thinking we would have more market impact of the tariffs and inflation, so a bit of remorse for not investing more. Any thoughts on waiting or moving forward?
That's a great detailed question. Matthew, thoughts?
Yeah, we see this time and time again. And I'll use an example. The answer to that is, from 2020, we had several clients that, you know, I worked with personally that were afraid, and, you know, the market volatility, they sold off, you know, took their equity exposure much below where it should be. And it wasn't until 2-3 years later that they got back in, because then the market rebounds and you've missed the upside. And now, okay, wait, let me hold off for a sell-off. And then the sell-off doesn't come. And so it's just this perpetual cycle of, oh, I shouldn't, you know, I should be in, but I don't want to buy in because it's above where I thought it should be. So in that case, if your plan is to have this amount of equity exposure or stock investment in stocks, it may be a bit of a slippery slope to waiting for the best time to get back in. And for those clients, you know, either just invest, you know, and move forward with it, or a smart way to approach this is to dollar cost average. And all that's a really fancy way of just saying, buy a little bit, you know, week over week, month over month, whatever the period is, and just gradually get back in, get your portfolio, your investment strategy to where it, the target, where it's supposed to be. Because otherwise you may risk missing another bull market. Some great opportunities there, Bruce.
Peg, we've got less than 2 minutes. Last word to you.
Yeah, I actually really believe that dollar cost averaging is a good idea. And also I want to thank Matthew for coming in, because there is a lot going on. And especially within the equity market and the you know, new AI and that kind of thing, I think it was worthy of having you on to represent our investment team. So thank you, Matthew, for coming.
Yeah, I want to second that, Matt. I want to second that. Great job. Again, the technical stuff, as an advisor, and I don't want to speak for Peg because she's smarter than I am, but as an advisor, I can talk in general terms about portfolio management and what you do, but to really dig in and how you make the decisions you make and the research that you and your team do, I mean, frankly, it's beyond my capabilities, and we appreciate your expertise, and we appreciate you bringing that to the table to share with listeners today. Last word I just want to give everybody, again, remember when we're talking about stocks, what we're actually investing in, it becomes this nebulous number sometimes of the Dow or the S&P, but what you're really buying is smart, innovative, efficient, well-run companies that over long periods of time are probably going to increase in value. There may be bumps in the road along the way. That's normal. But over the long-term, history has shown stocks reward investors. Denny, thanks.
Very good. We'll be back again with more of your money. Now, if you think of a financial question during the week, let's say midweek, call 888-6-ADVICE, 888-6-ADVICE, and you can always email those questions at yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Again, yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But we do hope you join us again next week with more of Your Money.